other thing is that suicide by gun represents 2/3 of the gun deaths in our country. And in Oregon, it's over 82% of gun deaths. So if we can look at addressing suicide by gun and reducing that access to gun, that piece, I think we can do a lot to decrease gun violence and the impacts that it has on our family members.
In suicide as well as homicide, there's the idea from expressed by some people that if you eliminate the guns, there's other weapons to use. People will use knives, as, for example, some of the countries that don't have many gun deaths, a lot of attacks happen against folks with knives or swords even. Do you think that's a relevant concern here?
It is. I have heard that argument, but I don't think it compares, because guns are so much more deadly. The injury that occurs to a person quite often results in death, as opposed to other means of attack. And also with suicide, if there's a suicide attempt with a gun, 85% of those attempts result in death.
Whereas if an overdose is used, there's more time to get help.
Yeah, and for any other method, it's less than 5%.
Quite a difference.
Yeah.
Quite a big difference.
Right. And so most of the people who attempt suicide once, if they are able to survive, they do not go ahead and attempt suicide a second time. But if they use a gun, they're much more likely to die and not get a second chance.
Understood. Hillary, thank you so very much for your time, for the work on this very important issue, and for the education that you've provided to us, to our listeners. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. Go to our website, insidewashco.org, to contact us or leave comments on this interview. This series is produced by Rick Paulson.
The intersections of art, culture, politics, activism, and music. And today, we've got a very special guest, comic book writer and illustrator, journalist David Walker. What's up, David?
How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. It's good to have you on.
It's good to be on. Wish the circumstances were better, but it's good.
Yeah, it's. I've been going through this thing where it's like a matter of perspective. Like, depending on what I focus on, I'm like, this is awesome, because everybody's doing things that are indicative of being aware and awake. But then on the other hand, if I look at some other stuff, I'm like, dude, this is bad, and it could get a lot worse, you know?
Yeah, almost definitely. I'm at that age where I see both sides of it a little bit more than I did when I was younger.
Right.
It seems like as it's cresting right now, it seems like there's some final throes sort of vibe feeling out there, you know, where like the police are like straight up rioting and like just throwing like caution to the wind and like and going and wilding out there. And I mean, like, I just don't know where that next step seems pretty scary, you know.
That's where I'm at, man. Because I'm like, okay, let's say for instance Minneapolis defunds their police department. And for in some way, shape, or form, basically disintegrates their police department, takes the millions of dollars that would have been going into the police and then diverts it into community programs to uplift people. And what happens with all those pissed off, bitter cops?
Right.
Do they organize into vigilante forces to retaliate against the same communities that they currently target, but now with the sense of lawlessness that far exceeds what anybody else was ever even capable of?
Or do they, what worries me is that who starts their own private police/security firms that then protects the communities that they're already protecting?
Sure.
And with even less impunity than they have now, which is no impunity at all. It's,
yeah.
you start thinking about it and it will give you a headache.
Yeah. And when does the black water of local policing come out? You know what I mean?
Well, you know, how many of those organizations have already been formed and the resources are already there, and this is just going to be a huge boon for them, a huge recruiting tool. But hey, before we get into the official questions, this is a great conversation. I just want to remind you guys, because we're on a limited time, I'm not going to have time to edit the way I normally would. So I want to encourage us to keep our language PG.
I can do that.
I can do that. Right. So one of the first questions I wanted to ask of you, David, what do you think this current moment, what do you think about this current moment with the confluence of COVID-19 as well as the national unrest due to police terror?
Well, I think we'd be foolish to not take into consideration the tremendous impact that COVID-19 has had. I think that the fact that a lot of the usual distractions that we have, be it NFL or the NBA or going to the movies or going to the bar or going to the club or going to the gym, all those things are gone right now. And so there's things that folks like you and I, like us, would see that other people could turn a blind eye to, where they could find distraction elsewhere, and it's not there. And I think also when you look at the state of the economy and the uncertainty that COVID-19 has wrought, I think that was sort of the perfect storm, if you will. And you know, as to where we're at, it's interesting because there's part of me that's like, well, I always thought this day would come, right? I always thought something like this would happen, but I never knew what it would look like, what would set it off, and I never knew how it would end. And so now we're here, and it's just like, okay, well, we're here now. You know, now what happens? And I think, you know, there's been other times, most certainly there's been other times where we've been, I guess you could say, at a crossroads in this country. It's been a while since it's been this intense. You know, when we look at what happened in 92 after the Rodney King verdict, it wasn't this intense. We haven't seen anything this intense since probably 67, since the long hot summer of 67. But it's also, yeah, it's very unsettling because I don't know where it'll go, you know. And it's, I've seen stuff in the news the last few days where it's like, oh, okay, well, now I have to be afraid for little old white people getting knocked down by the police, you know. And it's like, when there really has been the us versus them mentality has really taken hold, maybe more so than even when we were younger.
Yeah, dealing with police terror and the threatening nature of a rabid, out of control person with authority and weapons, I'm used to that, you know. Yeah. I expect to have to be careful about encountering that type of reality for the rest of my days. But seeing the level with which this has become mass activity across police forces in every city is it's kind of a little bit like a horror movie, you know.
Yeah. It's like, what, yeah, like something out of The Purge. There was that footage out of Buffalo, New York, really was like so unsettling to me as I watched it, and I was like, oh, okay, yeah, this is it. This is it's not the single moment, but it was clearly a moment of, yeah, this is where the battle lines are now. It used to be, you know, there are people getting attacked now that you never saw getting attacked. Now, part of that is because they're also protesting now. They're seeing, but so therefore, the definition of the enemy that the police state has is growing and getting bigger. But yeah, it's definitely it's you know what, I look forward to reading the book about this time. I like, let's get it over with. It's like, like when I read about Watergate, you know.
Absolutely. You know, you are have written some of my favorite comic books and graphic novels out there. If anybody doesn't know David's work, what can you just give us a quick rundown of some of the stuff that you've done?
Well, I've worked for Marvel. I wrote a book called Nighthawk. I wrote Luke Cage. I wrote Occupy Avengers. I'm currently co-writing over DC Young Justice, and co-writing another book over Image called Bitterroot. And I have, early next year, I have a graphic novel coming out, nonfiction, The History of the Black Panther Party. I've been moving more towards nonfiction. I published last year, had a book on the life of Frederick Douglass come out. So there's that. Now there's the Black Panther Party, and I'm currently researching a new nonfiction book that I've yet to propose to my editor, my publisher. But that's sort of the direction I'm going. Superhero stuff can be fun, but I've found this area that that I'm good at that needs to be addressed more, and that's the nonfiction historical stuff.
Sure. Have you noticed any change and more acceptance? I mean, clearly, you know, with the bringing on of Miles Morales and, you know, a lot of different change. I mean, do you see like a difference between like, you know, like Nighthawk's a great example. Like, I mean, I'm certain that ruffled some feathers early on. Do you think that now we're more accepting of, you know, if any of our listeners hasn't read the Nighthawk book, it's absolutely great, and you know, I strongly recommend it. Do you think you'd see more of that now accepted?
It's interesting because I've been thinking about that. A lot of people have been reaching out to me about Nighthawk. It's been 4 or 5 years since that title came out and was canceled. And as with everything going on in this country right now, there's a lot of division. And I think that, you know, like I've had editors and publishers reach out to me in this past week, sort of trying to, I guess for lack of a better term, trying to figure out what their next move towards diversity and equity is. And I think that I'm probably the worst person they could possibly ask, because I'm pretty radical in some of my thinking. But I also think that, you know, when we talk about, it's more than just a comic like Nighthawk, it's you know, my Frederick Douglass book, or this upcoming Black Panther book, where it's that the medium of comics, the medium of graphic narratives, makes it much more accessible to people, especially I often hear from people who have trouble reading, and literacy programs, that young people who have trouble reading really gravitate towards this stuff. And that's what excites me the most is you know, I mean, I got a bookshelf full of books on the life of Frederick Douglass that are giant impenetrable books with big thick blocks of text, and then I've got the book I wrote that's got a lot of pretty pictures in it, you know. I know which one the kids are gonna go towards.
Mean, I enjoy it. I mean, I've enjoyed March and I've enjoyed Mouse, and you know what I mean, like there's a lot of really powerful comic, you know, graphic novels that you to come out over the time. So I'm excited to see those coming from you. So
right on, Mike. Pardon me, guys. I usually just flow, but I actually wrote some questions down. So pardon me. how does the visionary aspect of your work as an artist in the real fan? How do the visionary aspects of your work as an artist in the realm of fantasy intersect with the current reality?
Well, you know, the current reality is can make for some really good metaphor, you know. When I was a kid growing up, I watched a lot of monster movies, and you would see stuff on TV, like you see reruns of movies like The Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which at the time was sort of a metaphor for the fear of communism, right? The 1968 Night of the Living Dead is a becomes a metaphor for civil unrest. And so I look to the ills of society and then try to think about, okay, well, how can I make this somewhat entertaining and poignant without it being heavy-handed, you know? Because sometimes that when it becomes too preachy, It turns people off. You know what I'm saying? It turns some people off. And I think the best art, especially the best art, all art is political, even when it's apolitical, you know? Even when it doesn't take a stand, it's taking a stand. I think the art that's most, that I find most appealing is something that you listen to or that you watch the first time, you just sort of take it in. You know, like, I'll give you an example. I was listening to the new Run the Jewels album a couple days ago, and I was like, oh yeah, this is pretty good. This is pretty good. And then like 2 days later, I listened to it.
Right.
And I was like, yo.
Yo.
Yeah, you know?
Yeah.
And it became something completely different. And that's the sort of art that I love. It's like, you know, you can listen to, you know, Marvin Gaye, What's Going On, and you hear a really great album. But then if you really listen to it, you hear a statement. You hear something profound, you know? And that's what I try to do with you know, not to put myself in the same category as a Marvin Gaye or Run the Jewels in any stretch of the imagination, but I do try to think about how would I engage myself? You know, how do I as a creator engage myself, the reader, the young man, the person who's interested in learning more? And you know, and how can I address systemic racism? How can I address the problems of the prison industrial complex? How can I, you know, these are the things that I think about, gender issues, and how can I do this and still have it be entertaining? Because I think art is meant to be our escape from reality, but not such a great escape that that it's naive.
Okay. You know,
it's like Gone with the Wind to me is naive. Gone with the Wind is a movie that makes slavery look fun, and it makes the South look like they were in the right during the Civil War.
Right.
So
yeah.
Not even naive, insidious.
It's kind of like an All Lives Matter movie.
Yeah, exactly.
I wanted to ask a technical question.
Sure.
If you don't mind me following up. And that is, do you have a routine? Is there a specific regimen that you follow on a day-to-day basis that helps you get your productivity done?
Well, there is a routine that I haven't been following. But I'm trying to get back on track with that. And I'm not going to lie, because I do work from home. And so the quarantine, stay at home, rather than helping me, has hurt me, because now I don't have any place to escape to. You know, I could go get a cup of coffee somewhere and decompress. But my routine primarily is, you know, get up. I try to be out of bed no later than 7 in the morning and be working no later than 8 in the morning. And then on a good day, I'd work from, say, 8 till about 2 or 3, take a break for lunch in there. And then after that, it's anything that happens, say, after 3-4 in the afternoon is anybody's guess. Am I going to keep working? Am I going to read? Am I going to watch TV? But I ain't going to lie, man. I have not been the poster child of discipline as of late. As everything from my waistline to my deadlines will attest.
That. Go ahead. Ryan, before you ask the next question, I've just got to... Being an MC, I hear jewels and gems everywhere. So I just heard like a self-help book. It's like, waistline to deadline.
Yeah.
the shortest distance between two points, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, no, as it was coming out of my mouth, I was like, wow, this is the most creative thing I've done all day.
Yeah, we got to find a way to sell that, you know.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the focus of the show is on music and art and all that. And where do you, you're bringing up the nonfiction stuff that you got coming up, which I'm really excited for. But do you feel like, what else can we be doing out here? Where do you see art's place in this? Where do you see, how can we challenge more? Where would you like to see this go right now?
Wow, that's a great question, because I've been thinking about that. I was talking to a friend just last night. I was encouraging him to discover some new music. that moves him in a positive way, right? And it's like, I have been at the beginning of the pandemic with COVID just looking for music I had never heard before, even if it was by artists who, you know, that I was familiar with, maybe as a different version of a, you know, recording of a Coltrane song or something like that. But I found that in that search for music I'm not familiar with, it also provides me with a little bit of an escape from the news and social media blitz, all that sort of stuff. And then it sort of reinvigorates me. And then as I'm reinvigorated, it inspires me to do work that I need to get done, whether it is the creative work of just meeting my deadlines, or that the work, you know, the socio-political work of trying to make change is and so art to me is like this it re-energizes and keeps us going at times when we feel like we can't go on anymore. Mm. You know, and it can be as simple as like, you know, I need to take a nap right now, and I'm gonna listen to some, like I said, Coltrane, because that'll help me relax, and then I recharge my batteries, you know, as opposed to I can then get up and go, okay, now I'm going to listen to whether it's Run the Jewels or you know, maybe something a little bit older, like, and listen to a lot of NWA for whatever reason, you know. Whatever it takes to get my middle-aged bones moving again. Sure. and I think that's crucial. And it's also crucial to understand how music moves through your being. You know, there's some music that will make you cry, will make you think of, you know, your broken heart. I ain't listening to none of that right now. You don't get me listening to there is no Teddy Pendergrass right. in my playlist right now. I just don't need it.
Mm. Man. Yeah, you just brought me back. It's funny that there are moments in which I almost forget what we're going through, you know, because I can look out the window in my residential neighborhood and everything looks normal. You know, there's trees, there's cars, there's houses, but it's something about what you just said about Teddy Pendergrass and music that has emotion, you know, and that reminded, it took me right back to the seriousness of the moment and the uncertainty about how long the moment lasts. And the understanding that there's no way we can go back.
No, you know? No way.
So what do we get to walk towards? And I think one of the challenges about where we were is that no matter how bad it was, if you worked hard enough, you could just kind of relax, you know, and accept like, this is what I get and I know what to expect. Whereas when we look forward at what we have coming, you know, it's like, we don't know what we're going to get. And the degree to which we put effort into it is going to influence an outcome, but we still can't say what that outcome is going to be.
And the reality is, though, that's what life has always been like.
Real talk.
It's just more in our face. The uncertainty of life is, there's it's harder to run from it. It's harder to deny it. And the people who are denying it right now are the people who are, you know, they're the police. They're the people that are shouting "All Lives Matter." They're the people who want to just go get their hair cut or go get a tattoo and they're not worried about COVID, right? But at the end of the day, and I wrote myself a note this morning because I just had this thing hit me, and it was that, you know, you seldom know where you are until after you've left. And I meant that more in a existential sort of way and from a career standpoint, because I've been sort of reevaluating my career, and it's like, you know, I don't know where I'm at right now. And I was like, well, of course you don't know where you're at right now, because it's all uncertainty. Now, a week from now, you're going to be able to say, oh yeah, this is, you know, it's like, what am I going to have for dinner tonight? Mm-hmm. You know, most of us don't necessarily plan these things out or know what the immediacy of now holds. And I think that right now we're in that. It's like, it's nothing but uncertainty. And then I remind myself that, yo, my grandparents went through way worse. Right. You know, I mean, the pandemic, notwithstanding, there's not a single generation of Black folks in this country who have not gone through exactly what we've gone through. Only you throw in things like legalized segregation, you throw in things like slavery, you throw in, you know, the Great Depression, all that sort of stuff, and you go, okay, well, we have been through this, and they survived, and that's the one thing that keeps me going as I think about all the things my grandparents and generations before me went through, and all that they endured. And that's also the reason why I won't give up the fight, you know, because then you're not honoring the people that came before you.
Absolutely. Real talk, man. Why don't we take we got a couple of minutes left. Ryan, can we start with you, and can we each just say a couple paragraphs about what we see as far as the near term and the long term reality?
Well, you know, I mean, I think never in my life would I expected to see people talking about defunding the police and those sorts of things so quick. So there's a glimmer of hope that that has entered in the main conversation, because that is, I never saw that as a realistic possibility. I mean, that's something that, I mean, we've actually discussed on the show a little bit, but I never saw it as like a real possibility in this world. And I mean, who knows, they will probably pull back from that as it said, but I would love to see, I mean, at least like an effort in some places shown towards that sort of thing. I mean, I think the ideal situation is that my kids are explaining to kids at that, little kids at that age, that, you know, when they're old, that there used to be this time where you used to call like a police officer on a mentally ill person, and they would come and kill them. You know what I mean? Like they would.
Right.
Like it's something in like the history of like, you know, like, you know, how we would talk about historical situations, and you know, like they would say, like, talk about this as a situation as it once was, you know. And you know, that's where I'd like to see the direction. What's going to happen now, though? You know, I mean, you know, I think we're all going to have to buckle in for the level of sacrifice that's what it's going to take for this. You know, I mean, I think, you know, we looked at the Freedom Riders kind of going through that situation and dealing with what they did. And we looked at people who didn't ride the bus for years. And we did look at, you know, the situations, and it takes a long time to really turn the boat around. And, you know, I think it's, you know, I saw somebody come back onto Facebook the other day, and they just posted like, oh, Facebook is still scary, I guess I'm going to duck out. And it's like, maybe this isn't be a fad. Maybe this isn't maybe this is the time that it sticks, and that's the work that's going to take, you know, that it's going to take, that it's going to be like we've been talking about this. I mean, for people in this conversation, we've all been talking about this forever, but now it's going to be part of that major conversation. Maybe we don't take a break from it, from Facebook. That's kind of where I'm at.
Word. Let's close with you, David, and thank you for coming on today, man.
Well, thank you. Well, you know, I travel a lot. Well, I used to travel a lot. I used to fly a lot.
Somebody's mic is rubbing up against the fabric or something.
Okay. Maybe.
I think so, yeah. Okay.
I used to travel a lot. I don't know what it's going to be like in the future, but, you know, when you fly a lot, you'll be on flights with really bad turbulence, sometimes to the extent that you're like, oh, you know, is this plane going to land safely, or are we going to die, right? Every flight I've ever been on has landed. You know, I've been on flights where people have had heart attacks and they've had to take them away, but every flight has landed. And so I think to that as a metaphor, like, here, it's going to be a really turbulent, bumpy flight, you know, and maybe if the pilots that are in the cockpit can't handle it, someone in the cabin might have to come up and land that plane. But sooner or later, that plane is coming down. And it doesn't matter if it comes down safely or if it crashes. Sooner or later, that plane comes down. And I'd like to think that we can, that there's enough people, competent pilots and people in the cabin, to make it work.
Right on. I appreciate that. With that, we're going to close the show. And I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in to Culture of Motion. And I'm just going to say very quickly, there's going to be varying grades of alien invasion. But what I'm looking forward to, there's going to be some fake aliens that come down.
you know, that are really U.S. military, and then there's going to be some real cats from other dimensions and other worlds, and I'm looking forward to trying their cuisine. All right, y'all, have a good day.
Thanks. Thanks, man. Take care.
Peace.
That was great.
Pacifica Radio.